Welcome to the Map Hackers podcast, where we dissect and discuss a buzzword from the GIS industry. And given the situation in Ukraine and the increasing ferocity of weather due to climate change, you may have heard the phrase disaster response. So in this episode, we're going to shine a light on the value of GIS for disaster response. We also have a special guest, but I'm going to let him introduce himself. But let's go ahead and meet the panel for today. Kate.
All right. My name is Kate. I work with GIS and with remote sensing data, and I'm particularly interested in GIS for disaster response.
Nice. We also have Kira here this morning.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kira. I'm working with the nonprofit and global organization team and have volunteered over my GIS career a number of times for disaster response.
Excellent. And then we have our drone enthusiast. Mike is here.
Hi, everyone. Mike here, Drone to Mike, AKA. Looking forward to chatting about disaster response and how UAS and aviation plays a part in that.
For those at home, Drone to Mike is the nickname he just gave himself. So we're just going to roll with it. And then our special guest today, a man who probably doesn't need an introduction, but we're going to introduce him anyway, Jeff, the master of GIS for disaster response.
Yeah, hello, everyone. Yeah, Jeff Barani, part of our disaster response program and public safety team, and excited to be with you this morning.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm excited that you're here. It's great to get you on the schedule. So looking at our today's menu, I think it's an important question to ask. Why should people use GIS in a disaster response situation? I'm going to pass that right over to Jeff.
Great. Well, yeah, thanks, Matt. And so, you know, I guess from our experience, you know, watching our users implement, you know, GIS for disaster response over the past couple of decades, you know, we've seen that it can really provide a lot of value to decision makers and GIS staff, the public, and really, you know, help improve outcomes for survivors. And, you know, in our experience, we really kind of see three key ways in which, you know, GIS for disaster response can, you know, really provide value. First of all, from a situation awareness perspective, you know, understanding what's going on, you know, is this a really big event or that's going to require a lot of resources or a small mm-hmm. event that may not be, you know, too big. Damage assessment more and more is being a really important, you know, capability, helping people get recovery funding, you know, even faster by leveraging some of the mobile tools like Survey123. And then finally, you know, managing information sharing, you know, that can be kind of interagency and kind of the disaster response, you know, GIS community working together to exchange both open and secure data and doing that, you know, quickly and effectively, as well as getting information out to the public, helping them understand what resources may be available to help them, what they, you know, basically situational awareness for the public and helping them understand how to stay safe from an incident or crisis that may be, you know, impacting their jurisdiction. So at a high level, those are really kind of the key ways in which we see, you know, GIS being effective to support disaster response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it, Jeff. Thank you. I really wanted to key on the increased situational awareness coming from the intel space. Knowing what's happening on the ground is key to delivering upon any of the other things. So if you don't understand the situation, you can't really act accordingly. So talked about increased situational awareness, increased communication, then also increasing that collaboration. But how does GIS deliver on those things? And I think I'm gonna pass one over to Kate. She has some pretty good examples of this in practicality.
Yeah, so for using how we can actually use GIS in disaster response, obviously the heart of GIS is making maps. So there are a lot of maps we can make to kind of start to visually assess what's happening on the ground and what some of the spatial relationships might be that can inform our actual response to a disaster. But we can also use those maps and put them into dashboards so that we can see a map with some stats on what's going on. The COVID-19 dashboard, everybody's favorite, is a great example of that, where we could track case numbers of COVID in different countries and see visually on the map where there were real hotspots and how those were changing over time. And there's other ways we can use GIS that are different than just looking at a map on a screen. We can do feature extraction. So we could see, we could take imagery that was collected before a disaster, like a flood scenario, and then look at imagery afterwards to do feature extraction and figure out where we could do feature extraction, or we could do kind of a change detection.
Like the flood extent.
Yeah, exactly. So to see where things are changing before and after that disaster, so we can figure out where to send people on the ground to kind of make sure that they're using their time as efficiently as possible, going where the help is needed most.
I think it's interesting. And I think it's interesting too, right? So you mentioned imagery, and obviously loving and supporting drones, I think UAS plays a major part in that as well, right? So traditionally, if there's a major disaster, even disaster, response times can be limited based on the area that's affected. Is it after a hurricane and there's, you know, quite literally debris everywhere? Is it a smaller incident? And traditionally, you know, UAS and drones are one of the first now eyes in the sky to be able to not only direct response teams into an area safely, but also it can capture that data on the ground, which ultimately feeds into some of the rest of these, you know, real time and feature extraction and change detection and so forth. So it's quite an interesting time that we live in terms of being able to have, again, that eye in the sky that can be up in, you know, 5 minutes after, you know, the area is clear of any sort of major disaster, or even when a disaster is happening. And a great example of that was when the volcano erupted and the fissures erupted in Hawaii. They had drones quite literally hovering over those fissures, just watching to see where lava flows are going at altitude and things. So I know the insurance companies are using them as well to be able to figure out where areas of recovery need to take place in terms of kind of getting families back with their lives. So a really interesting topic there, Kate.
Yeah, I mentioned that the drones would make it much safer, you know, to send a human in to do that investigation. I think it's just seeing last in Ukraine, they sent in some mobile, like ground-based drones into the Chernobyl site to test some things, see if there's like radiation was happening from the explosions.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to see some of this new technology be brought to bear to some of these situations. Like you said, with drones, you know, I can't remember, it's like 3Ds of what drones are good for, right? Dull, dirty, and dangerous. And I think those, you guys, you know, listed some great, you know, kind of examples. And, you know, not only is it, you know, 2D stuff, but, you know, 3D information as well, you know, too, for volumetric estimates of debris and damage, like, you know, the surfside collapse, or, you know, how much, you know, debris is on the side of the road after a tornado or something along those lines. So, you know, certainly drones are a big area, and the feature extraction that the, you know, the Kate was, you know, talking about, really bringing GIS to bear to help from a damage assessment perspective. And we saw, you know, during Hurricane Ida, you know, last year, one of our partners, Dewberry, was assessing, you know, over 400,000 structures an hour using their, you know, GIS techniques, you know, back-ended by ArcGIS. And certainly this is a growing area from a disaster response perspective.
Yeah, that's huge. The faster you can respond, the better, right?
Yep.
So I think we have some interesting use cases. So we talked about, like, you know, how GIS delivers, right, and why you should use it. But I want to give Kira an opportunity to talk about an interesting case that she's been working on in Ukraine.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. And this really falls into the increasing situational awareness. And the idea is to provide some simple field collection apps to the public, people that are on the ground, so they can record locations of unexploded ordnances. And then once we have that information, people that have the expertise to verify those reports can go back into the field, look at the location, verify that there is an unexploded ordnance there, and then take the necessary actions. So it's a really simple workflow, but it's real effective in terms of increasing awareness just based on people in the field with the eyes to be able to locate and record all of this information.
Yeah, yeah. Is that real time, Kira? Are people like out in the field and it's feeding into a dashboard, or it's, how's the communication working?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. So it'll be an app on the phone. Just take a photo that records the location. And so you have the image, you have the location, and then it feeds directly into a dashboard. And then the experts can take that information, go to the location, verify it, and then take the necessary action.
Is that dashboard up in like a crisis center, or just like on someone's response team's machines? Where is it?
So that's going to be, that's run out of Lithuania, the distributor. HNIC Baltic is the name of the distributor.
That's pretty awesome. So we're monitoring a situation in a different country from another country, but in real time, so that can respond to the disaster as quick as possible. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit, still have a little bit of time left, and I want to answer, I want to get to the bottom of one big question here. So we talked about how GIS works when a disaster strikes, but since we have Jeff on the line, I want to ask him this question. So when and how do I get started with GIS for disaster response? Obviously, once a disaster strikes, it's too late. So what are some suggestions you have to people looking to implement GIS in their disaster response, Jeff?
Yeah, no, great question. I mean, I think there's, you know, a lot to learn from the community that's out there. There's many great examples, you know, both domestically and abroad of how, you know, GIS can be used from disaster response and preparedness, you know, perspective. Some of the ways that Esri, you know, is looking to help kind of support that is we have a set of solution templates that, you know, are really kind of those common workflows that we talked about at the beginning. And, you know, oftentimes that's what we, you know, hear people, you know, kind of request from our disaster response program. So there's an emergency, you know, operations template. There's a set of templates for situation awareness and information sharing. There's a damage assessment template for getting information into and out of the field, you know, quickly. Using the FEMA, you know, standard forms. There's, you know, flood pre-planning templates to help you understand some stuff there. So you know, learning from others, some solution templates, you know, from Esri. And I think part of it is just, you know, working to start to, you know, get those in place with inside your, you know, organization. And, you know, from a GIS, you know, analyst perspective, I think having, you know, kind of conversations with your operations staff in terms of understanding, you know, what they need, understanding the types of decisions that they're going to need to make, and then kind of having an ongoing, you know, dialogue of, you know, maybe configuring an app, getting feedback from it, you know, during blue sky days when nothing is going on for from your operations folks to really kind of fine tune things. We also see that, you know, and so obviously data is a big part of that, understanding, you know, what data you have and what, you know, data, you know, you need. Do you have information on transportation and shelters and that, or do you need to go find the most current hospital layers, you know, for example, and really understanding, you know, what data you have and any kind of gaps that may, you know, exist. And, you know, in addition to putting together, you know, the various, you know, applications and the like that we've, you know, kind of talked about. And, you know, the other thing is oftentimes, you know, agencies will have, you know, exercises, you know, kind of consequence-free events where they can kind of practice and drill and simulate, you know, a disaster. And I think those are a great way to learn, great way to get kind of get feedback, and a great way to kind of, you know, exercise the technology consequence-free environment and kind of get things ready to go for your crisis center, your command center, and have, you know, the operations staff be kind of familiar with what can be done and, you know, be used to having the technology up on the screens and the in the command center or the like. So I don't know, just a couple of quick thoughts on how to get started there.
Yeah, I love it. Don't wait till the disaster strikes to start practicing. You know, it's never going to be perfect, but you can definitely make progress towards that perfection if you're practicing. And I really like that when you keyed on the data analysis, the data gap analysis section. I mean, one thing that we don't think of is we know what we know, but we don't know what we don't know, right? So if you can look at what you have and think about from those past experiences what you may need, you can start gathering that information prior to a disaster striking, so then you're better prepared. Are there any last closing thoughts from the rest of the panel on getting started or disaster planning, disaster response planning?
I think I would just say, in terms of a closing comment, you know, when you think about the preparation, you know, and you ask a good question, you know, how do you get started? I would say that it's just one of those things where you don't want to wait. You don't want to wait until a disaster has already happened to then realize that there's a need for, you know, disaster preparation for disaster response. It's one of those things that you always want to get ahead of. So just something to think about, you know, as you're planning.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the clock's ticking, you know, 60 days till hurricane season or so. And obviously, you know, wildfire right. season's, you know, upon us in some parts of the country, you know, already. And so, yeah, and exactly as you say, you know, Drone to Mike, it's, you know, important to be, you know, prepared as possible kind of beforehand and take the time to be ready to go, because sometimes you'll just never know when a disaster or crisis will strike. So.
Thanks, Jeff. Oh, man. Mike's never going to be called anything other than Drone to Mike for now on.
That's perfect.
so yeah, thank you for joining us today on the MEP Hackers podcast. So just to recap what we talked about, you know, GIS provides that increased situational awareness, the communication and collaboration space for disaster responses. There's tons of different technology pieces, building out the data sets, standing up your field of practice, and there's lots of great case studies. So if you're looking for examples on how to get started, they are out there. I just want to close with saying that while we all do work for the exact same large GIS company, the opinions, views, and promises made here do not necessarily reflect those of the company itself. So thanks for joining us, and stay mappy out there, everybody. Thank you.